some new rhymes. I'ma do fine. Break it down.
You're listening to 103.3 Waco Public Radio. I'm Caitlin Mills. In today's episode of KWBU's Fine-Tuned Music Series, my conversation with local hip-hop artist Peyton Bryce, who is professionally known as Prescription. Here's his song, Good Times, Good Vibes, with Blame It on Nicholas.
Yeah, I hit a few times, travel the world in due time. Tripping while tripping, but never tripping cause my shoes tied. All about my business, little buddy, I need a suit tie. I skirt so much, I need some new ties. Yeah, say everything twice like Johnny two times. Get the papers, yeah, that's a good line. Go get your shine box, baby, I need a shoe shine. Singing like Will Ferrell whenever his boy Blue died.
So you were born in Clifton, Texas, but raised in West Texas. Can you tell me about your experiences growing up there?
I love West. You know, growing up in a little town, everybody that you grow up with, they swear they hate their hometown, you know. But I like it. There's things I don't like about it, but I definitely have a deep love for it. Been there since I was younger, everything from, I still go to West Fest every year.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that's not necessarily my lane. You might not think I fit in, but I am country to the bone. I own 10 acres in West. West was cool. It kind of gave me a little bit of a different look on life growing up. I could go to Waco or go to Dallas, bigger cities, but I could always come back to the little town, and it's just a whole different vibe there.
I have read your artist bio, and you're not shy about talking about your past with law enforcement. You say that by age 12, you were brought home by cops regularly, and by age 14, you were arrested for your first felony. So why do you think you were going down that path so early on in life?
Man, I couldn't tell you, man. You know, everybody has their own things going on. I could blame it on a million things, but really, I think I was just young, man.
Yeah.
You know, when you're young, you got to figure things out for yourself sometimes, and that was my way of figuring things out, I guess. It really taught me a lot. I know I wouldn't be the person I am today if I wouldn't have got in all the trouble I got into, because really, that'll give you a whole different look on life. Like, when you're not able to do anything, you know what I mean? When you're stuck in one spot, it'll really change your look on life, man. You get in too much trouble, you're either going to continue to get in trouble for the rest of your life, or you're going to be like, man, this ain't for me, and you're going to try to find a way to get out of it. So thank you for getting me in trouble, because I have now gotten out of it.
Would you describe yourself as a rebellious person?
For sure, yeah. Independent person, but rebellious for sure. Especially growing up, man. Wasn't real good with people telling me what to do, you know? I feel like a lot of kids aren't good with people telling them what to do, but I was really good at expressing that. Yeah, man, it didn't go good for me there for a while, but everything's good now.
What about your parents? What were their reactions to you as a kid?
I grew up in a single-parent household. Grew up with my mom. My mom always did everything she could. She worked two jobs. You know, we had a nice house. You know, she did everything she could to take care of us. But in working two jobs, she wasn't home a lot, you know. Kind of gave me a little bit of freedom to do things I probably shouldn't have been doing. So my mom has definitely played a huge part in what I do. She still, to this day, my studio is actually still located at her house. So, like, to this day, I mean, I see my mama every day, you know. So,
yeah.
Much love to Mama Script.
So, how did you become interested in rapping and composing beats?
Well, I always found myself liking rap-like songs. Like, not necessarily say they were rap songs, but songs that, like, say my mama or somebody would have a CD or something. There'd be one that kind of had some rap feel to it. Mm-hmm. And I always generated, like, you know, gravitated towards that. And then when I got a little older, I think my first rap CD was Bone Thugs and Harmony. Somebody gave it to me for Christmas. My Aunt Jackie gave it to me for my birthday. And I was low-key kind of salty because it was edited. It didn't have the cuss words in it. So I was kind of upset.
You're like, give me the cuss words.
Yeah, I wanted the cuss words.
Angst.
Yeah, I wanted it. I wanted the cuss words. Like, there's a song on here that's not on the real version, you know? Like, but yeah, definitely Bone Thugs and Harmony, man. That was probably my biggest influence. If you go listen to a bunch of my older music from when I was young, because I started putting out CDs when I was still, like, in school age.
Like a teenager?
Yeah, so if you go back and listen to a bunch of that, I was rapping fast, you know what I mean? Like, I was definitely highly influenced by Bone Thugs.
How old were you when you first got into hip-hop music?
Well, I was supposed to graduate in 05.
Mm-hmm.
I put my first CD out in 05. I was doing music before that, you know, out of the house, but I really pressed up my first CD in 05. So I don't know exactly when I got started, but we're going on 15 years now of actually putting out product, you know?
Yeah.
So if I had to use a point that I would say I started, I would say when I started actually pressing up CDs, I would say 05.
Okay.
So 15 years.
Were people back then supportive of your goal to do music?
Yes and no.
What were some of the reactions?
Man, it's hard. You grow up in a little country white town. You know, it's something different. But at the end of the day, my family was supportive because I wasn't. That was one thing that never got me in trouble. Music never got me in trouble. Music never did anything for me except for keep me out of trouble, help me focus on something else. So I always had support. And like I said, to this day, my studio is still at my mama's house, so my mama still supports what I do because, you know, we be there all hours of the night, and we be there loud. And, you know, she has no worries, no cares. She's super supportive.
Yeah. So I do want to ask you about your friend. At age 16, you lost a really close friend. Can you tell me about that time and how that affected you?
Yeah, David Haddix, man. See, I got it tatted on the wrist. It was my first tattoo when I was 18.
Yeah.
Turned 18 when I got a tattoo, you know, because we're all smart at 18, you know. Yeah, man, David Haddix, he was just a real good friend. He died. He was 15 when he passed away.
How did he die?
He passed away. It was a car accident. Oh. So, you know, it wasn't like a thing. It was just a, you know, natural, regular stuff that happens to people every day around here. Car accident, man, and being that young, it had a lot of influence on me. You know, when you lose somebody that young, you don't really know how to handle it. So you're surrounded by nothing but other people who don't know how to handle it. Because, you know, when you're that age, you're not best friends with your parents. You know what I mean?
No,
you're
yeah.
best friends with other kids.
With so, your kids. Yeah, your
so,
friends.
You know, we all handled it different. To me, I just kind of put it into the music. Like, if you go, my first CD was, the background of it was just his name over and over in text. Mm. And then his second CD was like a picture of his cross on the road where he had passed. And like, so it was highly influenced. And that was part of the reason I kept doing it, man, because he had always told me, ah, man, I like this, and you need to keep doing this, you need to keep doing this. And there was other people that would make, you know, DJ CDs and stuff like that. Because at the time, I was just chopping and screwing music, you know, on turntables. I wasn't necessarily putting out rap CDs at that time, and he was just telling me, man, you need to keep up, you need to keep doing it. So when he passed, I really just tried to put his name in every song and just keep it going, you know, motivation.
When did you guys first become friends?
Definitely towards high school. It wasn't like we were friends from the jump. Like, we weren't friends growing up in kindergarten or,
okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But definitely in the middle school, towards the end of middle school era, we became linked up through mutual friends. He was just wild. He was definitely a spirit, for sure.
It's probably, since you describe yourself as rebellious, it's probably why you guys were attracted.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he came from a sticky situation too, and he did everything he could do to make the best of it. And he was wild, so I think that's why we got along, because we was both a little wild. You know, when he passed away, he had a younger brother, Daniel. I'm still real close with Daniel. I mess with Daniel all the time. And, you know, now Daniel's grown. Daniel's going on 30 years old. You know, he's getting up there. He's 20-something. So a lot of good relationships still come from that, even though Dave is not here with us today.
So you say that you had, like, his initials on your album. And
yeah.
Was that your tribute to him? Would you say that first one?
Yeah, for sure. All of it. It all is. I still, like I said, to this day, I still try to put his name in as many songs as possible. And it's crazy because, like, I have, like, there was times people that I've looked up to in music that I later have had the opportunity to work with, you know, they've told me, hey, I remember the first time I ever heard of you, it was blah, 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 and it was a CD with David Wayne's cross on the front, and they remembered, you know, or people that don't even know David or don't even know nothing about anything about West except for stuff that I talk about, they'd be like, they'll say his name or ask, you know, they ask me about him or something. It's just, it's like today in this interview, it's crazy that
he still pops up.
Yeah, it still popped up and it's still mentioned, and that's dope. I like it.
So was there ever a time that you thought about not pursuing music?
Oh, man, we all think about not pursuing music sometimes.
Doing something else, maybe?
I wouldn't say something else, per se. I feel like a reason I've always had support around me is because I've always figured out a way for music to make me money. I've never really made music and didn't make money. So, you know, like, growing up, I've seen lots of artists come and go for different reasons, you know, whether it be their significant other, or kids or family or just people, a lack of support from people close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It's because they don't make money off of it. They never figured out a way to make money off of it. So for me, I kind of always had that in my corner.
So how did you make money at it? Just out of curiosity.
Well, you know, back in the day, it was different. Now it's become a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know, when CDs and everything were moving, CDs were really, really good money. Mixtapes. I spent my whole probably almost my whole first 10 years of me making music was all done mixtapes, which at the time, mixtapes were probably the most popular thing going around. So, like, mixtapes hand-to-hand was really, really good money at the time. But now, say, I have this huge catalog of mixtapes that we've done over the years that now they don't make me any money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like if I would have spent the first 10 years of my career, so to say, making original music, then right now my checks that I do get from my original music would be way bigger because all my music would be original. So over the years, that money making has transitioned other ways. It started off, we was just selling CDs. Then it went to, I went from selling just CDs to selling CDs and shirts. Then I went from selling CDs and shirts to doing studio time. And then from doing studio time to doing music videos and graphics and then doing throwing shows. Like anything I can do in hip hop in that lane to make me money so that I can continue to make hip hop, then, you know, I try to do it. There's really no limitation. If it's anything hip hop, I'm not against taking a step back and doing that if it will help keep the ball rolling so that I can provide for my family off what I like doing. Because music is all I want to do. There's not, whether it be me making music or me producing music or me just pushing music, it doesn't really matter to me at the end of the day. I just want to do what I like doing. I don't want to go sit and be stuck working for somebody that I don't want to work for, somebody that I really feel like, I've seen it happen a dozen times, man. You could work somewhere for 15, 20 years, and then as soon as you can't work for them no more, you know, they got to replace you. You know, you're replaceable. To be able to make money on my own.
And, be your own boss.
Yeah, be my own boss and provide for my family and them not to be able to go without, you know, that's really my end goal. So no matter what happens, the money making is always, it's always on my mind, and we got to keep figuring out the new next way to do it. So
are you a self-taught producer?
Is anybody really self-taught? I feel like I could say, yeah, I'm self-taught, but I learn
from others.
Yeah, really just from watching others and trial and error. Like I remember, man, a couple of my first CDs, probably one of my biggest CDs I put out with DJ Rabbit Rick when he was probably the most popular DJ in Texas. And if you go listen to that CD and you put it in a stereo that only has mono set up instead of stereo set up, some of the vocals won't even be there because they weren't mixed properly, you know what I mean? So like I have two vocals overlapping each other that when you play it on a mono speaker they cancel each other out. So then when it gets to that part of the song it just be beat. And I didn't know that then. I know that now, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, trial and error, man, you do, you know, you learn as you go a bunch of times. And I still learn to this day. We make trips all the time. There's a producer I work with in Austin. I swear every time I go to his studio, I learn something about Pro Tools. Pro Tools is the program I use. And, like, I feel like I'm good with Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. I can zoom through Pro Tools when I'm at my studio in front of my desk doing my thing. But when I go to his studio, it's like there's some things that I do that take me, you know, 15 clicks, and he's doing it with one.
Yeah,
one
like all the shortcuts.
Yeah, you gotta teach me. Yeah, so every time I go to him, man, I swear, I learn stuff every time.
You're like, please write down all the shortcuts so I can practice them.
Yeah, shout out N.A., man. He shows me something every time I go down there, for real.
Yeah. Did you say that there was a time you said that that people go through that where, yeah, you think about not pursuing music, but what pushed you through and said, yeah, I'm definitely going to pursue this 100%? There's no other option for me but music.
The biggest motivation is every time I need something done or like the amount of people, like every connection I have in my life, almost like 98% of like people that I have on my team or in my pocket, they're like, oh, I need this, I can call this person, or oh, blah, blah, blah. Like all of that has come from me making music. There's not really anybody in my life, I don't think, that I can call that I didn't meet through music somehow, some way. Yeah. Whether it be they knew my music and that's how we met, or we worked together, or I hired them for something, or they hired, like, music is always the key. I think I have maybe one or two friends from high school that you know, still to this day, you know, are there. Just a few. Other than that, every connection I have, man, it's all come from music. I mean, to the point to where, like, my mom's remodeling her house. People that are coming by and fixing her house are people that I met through music. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And they're cutting us deals because they're like, oh, you know, they're just good people, you know. They want to see us they want to see us do good, and you know, the music is how they know me. So it would be a shame to take that, you know, take that away. Like, that's the biggest thing I have in my corner, I think. Yeah. You know,
you created a family.
Yeah, so it'd be a shame to not do it. Like I say, even if it's not me, even if it's a younger artist, which I do work with a lot of younger artists. Music, man. As long as it's music, and that's where every connection has came from. So it would just be a shame to just let it go.
Yeah. You created your own music label called One of a Kind Records. Why was it important for you to create your own label?
Well, at the time, when I first started, I used to have a bunch of artists on the team. So it was important to have a label because we all needed a brand to push, something to keep it coming back to the home base, so to say. So, you know, I feel like everybody at one point in time, if you make music, especially if no matter what kind of music you make, you want to belong somewhere, some label, some family, some something. Growing up in Texas, we had nothing but independent powerhouses. We had Swisher House, we had SUC, you know, in Dallas, we had DSR, Austin, we had the What It Do family. So it was like every big city that was close to us had labels, mm-hmm. you know, that were being represented to the fullest by good rappers. So I just wanted to do the same. And One of a Kind Records is, I actually had a different name before that. I won't say it because somebody else has used it, which is why we switched. So One of a Kind Records became the thing. And I actually made, One of a Kind Records has not, like, changed the whole time it's been up. Like, the roster has changed, artists have changed, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But, like, I made the logo 15 years ago. Everything has been set in stone.
The goals are the same.
Yeah, the goals are the same. Like, we're still out here. Stuff changes, but at the end of the day, it's still One of a Kind Records, and it will remain One of a Kind Records. One thing I won't sell off pieces of One of a Kind. I won't, you know, One of a Kind will be the home base. It'll forever be mine.
I think in one of your songs I was listening to, I don't remember which one it was, but you have a line in it where it's like, you don't basically want to, like, be a part of a bigger label.
I can't remember what that song is.
And so I was like, oh, he's talking about, like, you know, creating a local grassroots label.
Yeah. And One of a Kind, you know, we've been around a while. If you were to walk out in a One of a Kind t-shirt, like just a classic logo, the classic tee, you're liable to get somebody to be like, hey, you know, like, yeah. they know it, man. We've been out here. But from the jump, it was One of a Kind. My first CD that I pressed up had the logo on there and everything. We've been running with it.
So I do actually want to ask you about your chosen name, Prescription. Why did you choose that? Be honest.
Man, it's had many reasons. The biggest reason being I got in trouble in school one time and got caught with, like, 9 bottles of prescription pills. So that's kind of just like a shortcut to it. But, you know, I made a dozen different plays off of it to make it make sense. So it was more, you know, user friendly. But I kind of feel like over the years, if marijuana was to go legal, then I would center my name around something to do with that. I really would, because I feel like that's a big struggle. There's a huge population of people out here who need medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. And my name would go really far with that, I feel like. So.
I'm joined by local hip-hop artist Peyton Bryce, also known as Prescription. Let's take a break and listen to his next song, Trunk Sang, featuring Charlie Boy and Trilly Polk.
I'm gonna put a whale in there. Wow. Wow. Put that whale in there. Hey, man, it's what you get when you get soulful country boys out the south, man. Man. You gon' respect this hustle.
You gon' respect this flow.
You gon' respect this spirit.
You gon' respect this soul.
And the trunk sang. Wow. You gon' respect this hustle.
You gon' respect this flow.
You gon' respect this spirit.
You gon' respect this soul.
And the trunk sang.
Y'all
look tame. Guess we gotta take him to church. Now we gotta hit him where it hurts. PA Texas, my turn.
hard ground shaking. This, that history in the making. You know. You gon' respect this hustle. You gon' respect this flow. You gon' respect this spirit. You gon' respect this soul.
And the trunk sang.
This, I promise. Yeah. Run and tell mama script, I got it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to break bread with the pilot. My little 10 acres starting to feel like an island.
Yeah.
Wavy floating through your speakers.
Gravy.
All over dinner feature.
Country.
With it, yeah, nice to meet you. Working the square body, keep greens in the freezer. Stack it, I pass ports like a visa. Shout out to Trilly, bless game like a preacher. Yeah. Trucks ain't like Charlie, in, but he in it. Shotgunning something to take diesel. Catch holy spirit over instrumental. Grew up around some things that was detrimental. Character crooked, shout out my boy Pookie. Dozen swishers and cousin Hootie, no rental. Yeah, from the home of Diamond Dental. Swangers are spiritual. I done seen people get toast over whips that was miracle. Scream like it's ritual. Trunks ain't so loud, they not hearing you. Right. Turn it up,
you just heard the song Trunk Sang by local hip-hop artist Prescription featuring Charlie Boy and Trilly Polk. So can you walk me through what it's like putting music together for you? And we can talk about more about Trunk Sang in particular as well, since there are a lot of genres represented in just that one song.
Yeah, for sure.
What's it like?
Well, take for instance that song. That song, well, my favorite way to create music is to actually get in the studio and do music, like right then. A lot of people, especially in the hip-hop world, budget is a big problem for them, so they make their music at home, they get it ready to go, they go to the studio, they record it, and, you know, they, so they don't waste a lot of time, which is the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of spoiled. I don't like to do it like that. I always grew up with my own studio, and then I've been blessed to be in a position to where I have lots of people that want to work with me, so I tend to have the option to go to the studio and write songs in the studio.
Mm.
And that's the way I like to do it. So with that song, Trilly Polk is a up-and-coming star out of Texas. He's doing awesome, awesome. He was actually featured in the new remix to Southside Still Holding by ESG, which is a Houston legend, and they featured Trilly Polk on it. And he was probably the only person on the song. I think it was maybe two people on the song who weren't like SUC old legend members, and he was one of them.
Mm.
And just because people gravitate towards it, man, he has a personality. And so he's always compared to Charlie Boy. And so I watched the interview, and he was like, man, Charlie is the GOAT. Charlie's the best that ever did it, you know? So I was like, man, I got an idea. I hit up Charlie, and then I hit up Trilly, and I just kind of like mediated between them. And I was like, man, I'm gonna get y'all on a song together.
Was he really excited?
Oh, he was super excited.
Did he freak out?
I really feel like he didn't believe me. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
I know he knew I knew Charlie, and I knew, you know, he knew that I... He should have known that I wasn't
that you
playing.
Can make it happen.
Yeah, but, I, you know, just like me, I don't believe anything until somebody shows me. So, you know, it is what it is. But I remember that song right there. See, I have a couple distribution deals with distribution companies, and one of them is one from Houston called SoSouth. SoSouth actually distributes all the Texas legendary material, like Zero, DJ Screw, like all that stuff. That's their catalog. So that distribution company also has a studio in the back, and it was vacant. And so, you know, that's like a close hub. Trilly was staying in Houston. Charlie's from Hearn, so that's on the way there. So I rented out that studio for the whole day, and I scooped up Charlie, and we went to Houston, and Trilly pulled up on us. And so we got to create that whole song in the studio together.
How long did it take? Just out of curiosity.
The whole day.
Really?
We rented the studio. The studio was supposed to be out of the studio at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
I think Charlie finished recording his last line at like 4:28, and then I still have to like bounce all the files and get everything ready to go. So we didn't mix it there. My boy C Walker and Temple mixed it. Shout out C Walker. But yeah, we did that whole thing, that whole process of writing and. And coming up with the whole song, we did it all together, me, Charlie, and Trilly, in Houston at SoSouth, Music. And that experience was pretty live because, like, Trilly, like I said, I don't think he believed me. Trilly walked in the room. Trilly literally walked in the room and seen Charlie and, like, put his head down and turned around and walked out the room. You know what I mean? Like, he was, like, couldn't believe it. Yeah, he couldn't believe it. So it was a beautiful thing. That was really cool.
So a little bit more about this song. What do you hope that people feel from it? Like, what's the purpose of that song?
I hope you feel good. There's no, there was no cussing in it. There's one bad word in it on my part. I didn't even notice until the end. So the edited version, we have one word taken out of it, but there's no cussing in it. It's a family-friendly song. There's, even the subject matter is not, there's nothing bad about it.
Yeah.
Kind of feels churchy. It kind of feels soulful. So my goal is to shoot a music video with it, and I think that will take it to another step. It's doing pretty good. It's at like almost, I think it's at like 10K plays just on YouTube. Just the song without a video.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then it's still on every other platform. But I feel like if we get a music video behind it, that will even take it up another notch. So music video is heavy on my mind right now. I'm trying to make it happen before the winter hits, because it's definitely not a winter song.
Since you grew up in Central Texas as a hip-hop artist, what's it like? Is it bigger than what people think?
Definitely. Waco's home to people like Hustler E. And Hustler E is legendary. I don't know if you're familiar with Hustler E. He put out a movie when nobody was making movies. He put out an independent movie called Waco Kane, and it was huge. To this day, when we bring up where we're from, and like if you're in the hip hop, well, I know if you go out there in the regular world, they're gonna say, you know, David Koresh or Chip and Joanne. But if you go to like the hip hop world and you say Waco, 9 times out of 10, somebody gonna be like, oh, what you know about Waco Kane? Like, they remember that, you know, it sticks with them. So, man, Central Texas has always had a huge hip hop community here.
Mm-hmm.
Just never really had a lot of outlets for us. You know, Waco's also home to Symbolic One, S1. He's a Grammy-winning producer for hip-hop. He's produced for everybody from Beyonce to Eminem to, I mean, Logic to, I mean, anybody you can think of. And he's from Waco. And when he used to make music here, they used to have a group called Strange Fruit Project. There wasn't anywhere for them to do hip-hop here. And from then till now, that's still been a big problem for us. But here lately, we've been working on that pretty heavy, and things seem to be taking a turn. Mm-hmm. So it's looking bright. But in general, talent has never been a weak spot.
A problem, for, yeah.
Yeah, talent has never, ever, ever been a weak spot. And growing up in Waco or around Waco in this area, over time, you've seen the music evolve. Like when Houston was really, really popular at a time, Waco was really influenced by Houston. When Dallas was really, really popping, we was influenced by Dallas a little bit. Mm-hmm. So over the years, you've kind of seen it go this way and that way. But I feel like right now it's really at a good melting pot of people with their originality that have pulled this from there and this from there and kind of made it their own. So I feel like Waco has somewhat of its own sound, in that there is no sound, if that makes sense. There's a whole lot of originality out here. It's
so many things that it can't be one thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just waiting to be seen. And then if you go further out than that, Central Texas, as you say, like, man, even I remember years ago going to Killeen and working with DJ the Sick One. And now I go to Temple all the time, and I work with C. Walker. He's probably the number one producer I work with the most right now, and that's in Temple. So, like, Central Texas has a whole lot going on. You just gotta want to find it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta want to get behind it.
And so I read somewhere, I think it was on your social, where you talked about the underground music scene here in Waco. What genres are involved in that?
Man, there's all kinds of genres. I know in the past, since I've met Keep Waco Loud, pretty much, right, about a month before that, so going on, you know, a good 7 months or so, I've really found a whole lot more genres of music around here than I even knew was out here like that. Like, when I grew up, my uncle was in a rock band out here, and they did pretty good. So I knew that there was a rock scene here because he used to be in the rock scene. So I knew that there used to be a rock scene here, but as time has progressed, I kind of didn't even realize, man, what happened to the rock scene? You know, is there a rock scene here? And then one of my little brother-in-law was in a band, and the band that he was in, they were the ones that had Old Digs, the venue that kind of got everything going around here when Key Waco Loud started. I went to one show there. It was a rock show. It was probably like 50 people there. It wasn't a lot of people, but the vibe was like awesome. Like, I'm not to downplay hip-hop shows, but if you go to a hip-hop show, a lot of times, especially around here, a lot of times, people are there because they like hip-hop. They're supporting hip-hop. You know, they're there to support somebody.
Yeah.
But you get in that zone of people standing there and, you know, they're nodding their head. Yeah, they're with it, but, you know, they're just nodding their head. And then you go to the rock shows and it's like, man, people are in there mosh pitting, you know?
Yeah.
And so the vibe was super cool. And I was like, man, I definitely, on the cool, that's what made me want to start doing shows again. I hadn't done shows in years. And after that first show, I went to a rock show. I was like, you know what? Let me bring a rap show out here.
Yeah.
So then I threw a rap show out there and I think it was like 150 people that came. So they were like, man, this is awesome. Like, we got to keep it going. Since then, man, I've been to tons of rock shows, and I've really seen that, man, there's all kinds of music out here right now. After a few months of going to rock shows, I actually decided, well, I'm going to throw a rock show.
Mm-hmm.
So last month, I threw a rock show, and I put on 5 local bands, including Rad Dragon, who I know was up here recently. And, man, they're all talented. All 5 of them killed it, man. We had a good turnout.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to do it again. That genre, who else we got? Jazz and blues and... Man, just stuff that I really didn't even know, you know, I should know it. It's around here. Music is everywhere. Everybody loves music, especially all genres. But
yeah.
Not seeing it, it was just absent in my mind that it was here. And now, man, I see it all the time, everywhere. And it's just picking up momentum. I love it. I love it.
So I think what was interesting about what you said, how there's always been that world of the hip-hop community in Central Texas. But when people think about Waco, they think about, like, you know, maybe Fixer Upper or like some of the other things like that. Do you think those worlds are starting to connect now that the city's growing more and there are more opportunities for maybe underrepresented genres to play at these newer venues? And
For sure. I know Kiwego Lao. I know a whole bunch of their events they do. They mix genres. So, like, it'll be an event that'll have rock and it'll have rap and it'll have jazz and it'll have, you know, it'll just all be blended together. And in doing that, I feel like we get to reach new demographics of people. Like, I did a panel the other day at the Lost in Waco with Adam.
Yeah.
And at that panel, I just felt like that was a good example of the diversity of people in the room that were there was mm-hmm. people that I normally probably couldn't have got in front of to even talk about my hip-hop stuff, not because they wouldn't have lended an ear, but because I wouldn't have ever been in the same room as them.
Yeah, you know, it was an opportunity to do it.
So I feel like it's definitely building bridges and filling in spaces with what Kiwego Loud is doing. Lindsay Lipman, man, she's out here doing great things. I would say between Kiwego Loud and Lindsay Lipman, me personally, my crossover to other crowds that I have not yet been able to hit is happening, you mm-hmm. know, just off the them two assisting, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. That's what we all need. We all need more exposure. We all need bigger reach. And we all need, you know, you can only put the same thing in front of the same people so many times. At some point, it's got to be put in front of new people, you know?
Yeah. So. Since you did mention Rad Dragon, who's another one of our artists that we've interviewed for this series, they told me that you actually reached out to them the day that they were recording their interview with me about, hey, do you guys have like a song that I could use, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think that's like really interesting. It's like, oh, a hip hop artist is connecting with a punk rock band to like build each other up. Do you think that that's a unique Waco thing, or do you think that that's just something that's happening more often now in music?
I really can't call it. It sounds unique to me, so I really can't call it. The day that I did hit them up when they were over here was actually because, you know, I do all this. I throw the private hip-hop party every month for the hip-hop. And at those events, we do lots of stuff for the artists. Like, I had somebody give away, or I've had multiple people give away music videos.
Mm.
I've had people give away beats, production, studio time. Interviews on podcasts and 94.5, the radio station, and you know, all kinds of stuff. We just give stuff away to the artists so that they can leave. They have a chance to leave with something that can help their career.
Yeah.
And so with the rock show I was doing, I didn't have anything like that lined up. So I was thinking to myself, like, man, if, you know, I can go to the rap station any day of the week, like, but these rock bands, they can't go to the rock station, and we have a rock station. So yeah. I was like, you know, maybe I'll reach out to them. So I reached out, ended up having a mutual friend who works at 102.5. And so I went up there and had a meeting and kind of talked to them. They used to do a show a long time ago called Local Licks at 6, and mm-hmm. it was nothing but local bands, and they haven't had it in years and years and years. And so in going up there and talking to them and kind of telling them, hey, you know, there's this band out here and there's this band and this band, and you know, they got original music on iTunes and Spotify, and like everybody is, there's bands out here that are working hard that have high quality music and have music videos and they're on every platform and they're not getting any exposure. Like, y'all are a rock station, how can we get them affiliated?
Yeah, get local, you know, musicians.
Yeah, so, you know, in having that conversation and bringing that to their attention and stuff like that, they kind of were like, well, maybe we can bring local Licks at Six back. So that's why I had hit up Rad Dragon that day, because in hopes that I rounded up all their music in hopes that they will bring that show back, so that mm-hmm. then the rock people have somewhere. Because us hip-hop, we have on Sundays at the local rap station, they have, what would you call it, street beats on Sunday.
Oh, cool.
And so
like a little segment or something,
yeah,
dedicated
so
to it.
On Sunday there's like 2 hours straight where you can get nothing but local music played, you
that's
know
cool.
So like you don't have to, you literally, all you have to do literally is just send in your radio edited version and let them know that you sent it, and you're pretty good.
Yeah,
so I feel like, you know, if I could do anything to help the rockers have that same little bit of something in their corner, I was down to do it, and it's looking like it's gonna work out for them.
Yeah, I do want to go back and talk to you about when you started performing for the first time. Okay. Was it hard to find venues that would host you, or like in Central Texas, or did you perform a lot outside of Central Texas? And then what was that process like?
A lot outside.
Yeah.
A lot outside. When I first started, I didn't do a whole lot of performing. Then I would say like probably 2011 to 2014, we did a lot of performing.
Mm.
And in that time, we had a lot of things going on. The only time we really performed in Waco was at the Waco Summer Bash, whenever that was going on, which was a huge event that we did for like 7 years straight.
Does it still?
No, it's not going on right now. Lack of venues. We don't really have a good venue that allows us to do what we need to do. The last venue we went to, we moved from the Extraco to the convention center, and the convention center changed their floors and they wouldn't allow cars on those types of floors.
Oh.
So the same year that the Autorama had to stop doing their car show, the Waco Summer Bash had to stop doing their car show, which are both long running car shows in this area.
Mm.
So other than that, we stayed on the road. And at that time, there was a magazine from Waco called We Grind Hard, and they were doing stuff and a whole bunch of stuff in Dallas and Houston and San Antonio and stuff like that. So we stayed on the road doing shows. I could say like in 2012, I think in 2012, man, we probably did over 70 shows, all just based off of connections that the magazine had made for us.
Mm.
So that year we were everywhere.
Yeah.
But then there's been years where we only had a couple shows, you know, it just depends on what all was going on, because in the area it was just never like that. So like 2014, 2015, stuff like that, I threw my own shows in Waco, a couple of them. I threw my birthday party. It was a big event.
Where'd you throw them?
Once again, the venue dilemma. I was having to rent out spaces that you would normally throw, like quinceañeras and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah.
But, man, the price tag on that, you know, is like $1,400 a night.
Just like however long you were doing the show.
Yeah, for some hours, yeah. So, you know, that really takes away any of your opportunity to not put yourself in a hole. You know, your main goal at that point is we got to break even, because you didn't pay for that venue, and then you had to pay the performers and, man, security. At the end of the day, you're like, man, we spent way too much money. But so Waco, nah, we never really performed around here. I would say, honestly, this year we've probably performed more in Waco than ever in Waco.
Where do you guys perform in Waco now?
Right now, I performed at quite a few Keep Waco Loud shows. Most of those are at Brotherwell Brewery. I performed at Spin Connection, performed at Garage Fest, and then now all the shows that I've been throwing lately have been at Rocky's Roadhouse, which is in Belmede.
Mm.
We use the backyard area, and then Old Digs, which is now shut down. Man, some car shows. Like, Waco this year we've done a lot of performances in Waco. And normally we try to focus outside of Waco, because you don't want to make yourself too watered down in one area. But
yeah,
we've never had as many opportunities in Waco, so we have to capitalize, and we can't pass them up, you know.
So do you still feel like there needs to be more venues for hip-hop?
For sure.
Okay.
It's crazy, because you can go to any city close to us, Austin, any city, and people are throwing shows anywhere. You can go to a hip-hop show in a coffee shop. You can go to a hip-hop show in a parking lot.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Anywhere that they can set up speakers and get people together, they can throw a show. And in Waco, it hasn't been like that until recent, but it's definitely coming together now. The list of venues that's willing to put hip-hop on the ticket now is increasing, I feel like, on a monthly basis,
mm-hmm.
thanks to people like Keep Waco Loud.
Yeah. So for people who are listening to your music for the first time, what is it about your lyrics and your musical composition that is uniquely Prescription?
My voice, for one. I remember when I first started rapping when I was in grade school. They would always tell me, like, man, yeah, you go hard, man. It'd be real good if you didn't sound like a little girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, ah, you know, because I just really don't have a lot of bass in my voice.
They were baiting you.
Yeah, but, like, over time, I've really realized that some of my favorite rappers, they don't have a lot of bass in their voice. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm cool with it. But I feel like my voice, my energy, and...
what you rap about, maybe.
Yeah, and oh, definitely my content. My content... I got a little age on me, you know. We'll just say I'm 30 for lack of a better number. But, you know, I feel like I have a good balance of taking the old school seriousness of what you're trying to say and mixing it with the new school waviness of it just feeling good and riding good. I feel like I have my own balance of that, and I feel like it goes a long way because... whether you like it because it's wavy, it's got a little bounce to it, or whether you like it because of what I'm saying, you I feel like you can find a reason to like it, unless you just don't like it. Some people don't like everything, you know what I mean?
How would you compare your music when you first started to now, in content-wise?
Content-wise? The content is pretty similar. I try to have some meaning. I try to have some depth to it, to what I'm trying to say. You just have to really find it tucked in the wittiness. But... I'd say the biggest thing that's changed over time, and it's been quality, man. Quality.
Yeah.
Quality, of course. Because, you know, when we first started, my first CD, half of it was done on I don't know if you remember the old computer mics that were, like, long and skinny.
Oh.
They were, like, curved,
yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And my first CD that I pressed up, it was, like, 20-something songs, and the first half was done on that mic, and the second half, no, vice versa. The first half was done on a stage mic, like a Shure stage mic, and then the second half was done on that old computer mic. So, like... from then till now, like, I just got a piece of studio equipment the other day. I've wanted for 10 years. Quality would probably be the biggest difference between then and now, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're about to have another child. How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling good. You know, I mean, I'm not going to be feeling bad about it, you know.
Yeah.
It definitely is going to be a lot of work, and, you know.
Do you feel like you're more prepared this time since you already have a child?
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
Not at all. I mean, just having to do it all over again kind of seems like a whole lot. You know what I'm saying? I was just talking to my old lady about that last night. Like, it's cool and it's going to be fun, but we got to do it all over again, you know?
Like, do y'all know if it's a boy or a girl?
It's a girl. Yeah,
so we're going to have two girls?
Two girls, yeah. Well, I got a house full of girls. My old lady, my daughter, if I have another daughter, I have four German Shepherds, all female.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's just me and my rooster out there, man. We're the only guys, you know?
Yeah.
Hard times.
Yep.
But, I mean, it's exciting. It's for sure exciting. I know I just built me I've had, like, a five-year plan in my head. So I bought this land, I bought these little 10 acres, and I built me a little house, a little tiny house. Like, I don't know if you ever watched Tiny Homes.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
It's kind of like that. Like, it started as one of those portable buildings that you buy, like, and then we just expanded and built and did, like, it's really nice, though. Like, it's super nice, but it's real small, and then now we got another kid coming.
Is that another love of yours, like, building stuff?
No, not really.
No.
No.
You're just,
no,
like,
no,
fascinated
no.
by the tiny home living?
No, well, you're just trying to save money, man. Because, like I said, I have a five-year plan. You know, I bought the 10 acres, and it had, you know, everything ready to go, water, septic, and electric. So I was like, hey, you know, I could build me a little tiny home, and that'll get us up and running.
There you
and then
go.
I can build us a big house. And then once the big house is ready, then I can turn the little house into the studio, maybe finally give my mama some breathing room, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, now we got this house, and it's, like, just now, like, we just built a porch on it the other day. Like, it's just now getting, like, super dope, and then we finna have another kid, so.
That's exciting.
Can't really expand on it. It's about time to have to build a big house, man.
So what are some projects that people can be on the lookout for coming up for you?
Trunk Sang video. I'm gonna say it a dozen times. Matter of fact, I'm gonna film it. I'm gonna film it and put it on Instagram. We're going to set it up. I really am wanting to get back into my merch. At one point in time, I was heavy into the merch. My online store was thick. Merch was probably one of our most, one of the things that kept the music going the most because it actually brought in profit and stuff like that. So I'm wanting to do, like, nothing but limited edition merch so that there'll only be, you know, 30 pieces or only be 100 pieces, you know. and, you know, the price might reflect it, but it'll be, you know, the rarity of it, the collector-ish type stuff.
Yeah.
What else is next?
Are you writing any music at the moment?
Oh, man, we write lots of music. I got so much unreleased music. Like, probably one of my biggest downfalls is I hold on to music for too long. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a lot of music that we hold on to, and really it's just because everything takes a budget. We could do it on our own, and we could release stuff, and, you know, we're blessed to have different distribution deals to where anytime we want to release something, it's not the same struggle as a lot of the other independent artists where they're having to use a service, they're having to pay every time they want to put music out and, you know, keep dumping money into it. I'm blessed. If we want to drop something, we can just send it off and have it released. And so I could just release music all the time, but, you know, we both know it's the push behind it that matters. You know, these major labels, they could spend $300,000 producing an album, and that sounds like a lot of money, but I bet they're putting like $2 million into the push, you know what I'm saying? $3 million into the push. Like, the push is what matters. You can make as much music as you want to, and it can be awesome music, but at the end of the day, what's really going to make that music reach the level that it needs to reach is going to be your budget to push that music.
You have to be strategic about when you release certain type. Like,
for sure. And so, like, it's probably my biggest downfall, sitting on too much music. But when the right opportunities come, you know, around for certain things, I release it as soon as something makes sense for it, it gets released. So I got a couple projects with C. Walker and Temple that he produced the whole thing. I got a couple CDs in full with Charlie Boy. One that C. Walker produced. I got a project with Ingenious from San Antonio. He's actually from Waco, but he stays in San Antonio. I'm mainly doing collab EPs right now. Like, the song Good Times, Good Vibes is me and Blame It On Nicholas. We had a collab EP. All the songs were us two together.
Yeah.
Same thing with Chance Foley. I got a new artist at 17. He goes by Jay Bear. We're going to do one. So my goal is to just do a bunch of collaboration projects while I build up a bigger demand for a solo project. I could drop a solo project, but it's something that I don't do. Like, it's something that I have a handful of people that, you know, have asked for it for a long time, and I know they would support it, but at the end of the day, my goal is to have more people asking for it. I want enough people asking for it that I know, okay, it's time.
It's time for it.
Yeah, so I'm mainly just doing collab work right now. That's where I'm at this point in time. But coming soon, man. Definitely before the door closes, we got to release a all prescription album. An album is something I've never done. I've done mixtapes, I've done EPs, I've done singles. But an album, actually sitting down and from beginning to end and coming up with an album project, I have yet to do. So I definitely will have to knock it out one day.
Yeah, something to look forward to.
For sure.
Well, thank you, Prescription, for joining us today for the Fine Tune Music Series. It's been a pleasure to talk with you and about your experiences.
Thanks for having me.
Find more information about Prescription and full versions of the music featured today online at kwbu.org, where you can check out other artist spotlights for the Fine Tune Music Series. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at KWBU for more updates and news about the series.